Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch a Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show. I am the Dude.
And I am Grim. And today we are going to be discussing being deloused in the comatorium by the Mars Volta.
The Mars Volta.
The debut album. Their debut album.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Grim, before we get into it, we would just like to tell you all, first-time listeners, this is the podcast where we pick our favorite albums. We discuss the albums, and we discuss each track on the album. Ain't that right, Grim?
Yeah, that's correct, because if you remember back, there was a day when your only options were maybe vinyl and or CD and or some medium that could encounter the dreaded scratch. And unfortunately, a lot of times when that happened, it may have been a song you didn't want. But in this podcast, what we presuppose is maybe it's a track that you do want, or you could just live without if you had to, if you had to.
Yes. Now, of course, many people are going to say, well, this is a masterpiece. And, you know, I
can't scratch anything. They all are. Most of them are. I mean,
why do you think we're talking about them? I mean, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're really not talking about, like, you know, garbage in which we would basically just donate the album anyways. So
exactly.
The idea is, you know, there's a lot of games like that. You know,
so many games. Yeah. So many games.
This, so you gotta roll with it.
So yeah, and while you're here and while you're listening to us ramble, please, and tell you what you're watching too, go ahead and
like, subscribe, and comment below.
Market. All right, Grim. Deloused in the Comatorium by the Mars Volta. Dude, 2003. Wow. This one's, you know, I got into it shortly after that. I would say I probably got into it around 2005. So
yeah, I would argue about the same. And, I'd have to go ahead and give the shout out to fan of the show, Michael Stroshine, because I believe that is the fine gentleman that introduced me to the Mars Volta by way of Francis the Mute, which led me to this album as well.
To getting deloused. Mm-hmm. Well, Grim, one thing that I did not realize when I started, through all these years, I've been a huge fan of this album, loved it, and I know both you and I are huge fans of Rick Rubin and his production, that he produced this album. Like, very, very cool, man. And,
co-produced. You don't want to get rockstone at you here.
Co-produced. Omar produced with Omar, I think. Yep. But now, Grim, you noticed that it was also, or Rick Rubin has recorded a lot of albums and artists in the mansion. Is that right?
Quote unquote mansion. Yeah. And I think that's the one where, at least in the documentary, the Peppers, they talked about it being like Houdini's house or something at one point.
I think it was.
If I'm not mistaken. But yeah. Yeah, he's used this. And I guess it's, for a lot of artists, created just like this warm, creative space that they could kind of relate to and really work well with. And I had no idea before I actually read about this album that it was done there.
Yeah.
By Rick Rubin. So that was a very interesting, because for some reason that whole like scenario to me is so cemented in with the Red Hot Chili Peppers because of Blood Sugar Sex Magik, to have this album, I mean, a while later, but this album nonetheless done there. It's just such a spectrum of, you know what I mean, of sound and creativity, yet there's carryover with the members, which is cool.
That is very cool. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Because John Frusciante and Flea both play on this album. Now, Flea plays bass on, 9 out of the 10 tracks? And then what's this, Justin Mendel?
JMJ.
Johnson? JMJ.
Justin Meldell Johnson, yeah.
Meldell Johnson, yep. So, which I thought was
on Televators, which
Televators,
really good song,
very good song. Yes. You know, one thing, going back to Rick Rubin though, that, and I don't know if it was Cedric or Omar that kind of talked about it, but they said that, you know, Rick Rubin sort of oversimplified some of the, and this was in a criticism, I think he was oversimplified some of the parts that they really thought were unique and just made them more digestible. And if you listen to this album, here's the thing. It's not for everyone. The Mars Volta is not for everyone.
Dude.
There is just some intensity, man. You know?
I agree, but this album is more for everyone, but not for everyone, than all the other ones, in my opinion, because all the other ones are even more like out there. You know what I mean? But you're right. It's still not for everyone. It truly.
Right. So if Rick Rubin came in and made it more digestible, I could only imagine what it was before. Right.
Holy Christmas.
Now I've seen Mars Volta live.
Oh, sweet. I have not, man.
It was that was an experience too. You know, there's within this album and some of their other ones, they really do some kind of soundscapey stuff, right?
I always wonder how that like translates live, because there is a lot of just like blank spaces.
That. Yeah, and when I saw him live, and this was, I mean, this was years and years ago when I was in Chicago, so 10 plus years ago, and a lot of shit's happened since then. But I remember there, you know, they did have those kind of slower, you know, I don't want to call them dull, but soundscapey moments. And for me, I kind of wanted, you know, I'm like, oh man, let's go song to song to song. Like, that's kind of what I was into. It was still a great show. I mean, it put on an amazing performance for sure. And I don't know if all their shows are like that and whatnot, but I was more just like, man, I want to see, you know, this song and this song and this song. And
sure. It just,
when you have those kind of almost long dreamlike sequences, it just takes a while to get there. Right. So,
Totally.
It was great. Still highly recommend. I mean, I think they broke up in 2013 is last I heard. And so I honestly,
even as I would consider myself a fan, I didn't listen to their last album.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, I listened to Amputecture, Bedlam and Goliath. And then
listen
what
to
else
the shit out of Bedlam and Goliath.
Octahedron a little bit.
Yeah.
But back to this album. It's interesting. It's sort of a concept album. The album itself has a flow. It has a feel to it.
And Go ahead. That's where I was going. It's a concept album, just for the fact that like the album as a whole was somehow based off like this short story that Cedric, correct, wrote.
Yeah. Which is also, Cedric Bixler. I'm going to say this wrong. Zavala. Cedric Bixler Zavala. Yes. And basically what it is, they had a friend. His name was Julio Venegas, I think. Venegas, something like that. And I guess he was like a poet, artist. And it sounds like he may have had some personal issues where he sort of deliberately had a drug overdose. So, I don't know.
It put him into a week-long coma, right?
I heard it was for several years. I heard he was in a coma for like years. And then apparently...
Oh, I'm sorry. I was actually thinking of the story. My fault.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, that's heavy, then, man.
Well, and then apparently he recovered from it and he ended up committing suicide by jumping from an overpass during rush hour. That did not end well, unfortunately.
The shitty thing about that too is in that method, instead of just like jumping off a bridge, dude, you fucked someone else's life too.
Someone else's life up. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a real bummer. But anyways, go on. I digress, but dude, seriously, that's shitty, man, because you fuck somebody else too.
I agree.
Anyways.
So that's an intense situation and story, obviously, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Issues there. But that does lend itself to sort of the darker tones of this album, which it certainly has. And I feel like this album has, you know, there's more darker tones than I guess I get when I listen to a lot of their other stuff. This one has some more eerie stuff. I don't know.
I think it has a lot of eerie stuff, but I guess for me, I don't sense like a big increase of that here versus other stuff, because I think a lot of it to me is dark. But I mean, I'm sure listening back now, even again, thinking about it in this way, you'll take more out of it. Yeah. Except one thing, which is, dude, and I'll say it now because I don't know that it really matters, because Tirame a la Sarañas, dude, is my favorite song on the album. And it is so, so dark. I feel like it's the one that's like acoustic guitar, and it's in, yeah, it's like right before the Drunk Ship of Lanterns.
It's the bridge, man.
Yeah. But like, dude, I can listen. It's like the guitar is like on a 12 string or some sort of, almost like a short 12 string to get that high tone. And the mode and the scale that he's using is so like dark and abstract. It's like the most amazing thing I've ever heard. I actually, every time I listen to this album, I think I probably rewind that part, number four, which is only a minute and 28 seconds, probably it's three short. To four times before I let it go to the next one.
Wow.
Because okay. I think it's so good.
Gotcha. That is. That's very cool, man. Very cool. Well, one thing that I did not know this, but it's cool. You know, it was produced by Rick Rubin. You got Flea. John Frusciante plays on this album. But also one of our favorite artwork persons, Mr. Storm Thorgerson, the late, great Storm Thorgerson, actually.
Oh,
yeah. No,
dude, I didn't know that.
Actually, he passed away in 2013. So it's been a while.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
But people might know him that he created one of the most iconic album covers of all time. A few of them, actually. But the first
I was going to say he did
Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, yeah. Just go ahead and pick yourself back up after that one.
Yeah,
dude, I know. I think his artwork is some of the best. And I like that. I'm glad you brought up the artwork, because we were starting to talk offline, but I wanted to save it for the show. Because you have two very distinctly different covers for this album. Mm-hmm. Both of them by Storm Thorgerson, correct?
Yes, correct. Yep.
The other one is almost like this landscape, and there's like a head on this lake, and it kind of cuts about here, and then everything is above, the skin is above, and the rest is below, and it's like these lines. And I feel like in reading about it, they kind of criticized the other cover, right, dude? With the gold head laid back with the...
Yeah, I think more what it was is they liked the lake one with sort of the roots maybe coming out of the head, kind of going down into the water. They preferred that one. And what it sounds like, because we were discussing this on our Monday episode, and if you haven't checked that out, we discussed the new box set by the Mars Volta, so definitely check out that episode. But when it came to the album cover for this, they made it sound like somebody at Universal chose that one, and they wanted the other. They wanted the more, I guess, you know, art. I don't want to say artistic, but that one seems like it's more of a painting or a drawing, whereas this one seems like it's more of a photograph that's kind of been put together and whatnot. So I like the drawing one, the one with the lake.
I do too, man. It shows so much more. Like, mm-hmm. if you really think about it, it to me, it's a just a beautiful image. Really is striking.
I'm a huge, huge fan of it. When I had my poster in my room of all these different CD covers and everything, I had this album, and that's the side that I put up. And, you know, I was just like, I like this side better. So,
but, you know,
let us know what cover you guys prefer. We want
to. Yeah, I would like to know that. But I will say, in all fairness, though, to the other image, like, let's take all this stuff out of it and, like, someone's flipping through your vinyl collection, dude. If I was looking through someone's records and I didn't know that record and I saw the other version, I would still be like, I want to know what this is. Like,
yeah,
this no, this looks interesting, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, Grim, oh, what album cover should we put on the thumbnail for this? That's a good question.
I want to put the one the band wanted. That's what I would put, because I feel like, I mean, not that anything I ever did mattered in a musical sense, but like if it had, I would wish that you know, that they would put the one that I wanted, not the one that the company chose.
That's fair.
You know what I mean?
Can't argue with that, man. Can't argue with that.
Yeah. So, okay, we've kind of talked about the artwork, the recording, the production. I kind of want to do this before we get in to the tracks, which I guess is different.
Tell everyone to like and subscribe and comment below.
Like, subscribe, and comment below.
No, please. I'm going to write that down anyways.
Mark it to zero.
That is a great thing to do, and that would be really neat for us. But aside from that, dude, I would like to know your favorite song on the album. Like, before we talk about them and scratch and all that, what is your favorite? The one you could not live without. Like, you'll play Frisbee with this bitch and buy a new one if this track gets scratched.
I would say, okay, so I can go two ways on this. One, the first one that really, really grabbed me, where I was like, man, I remember listening to, like, the song just by itself, and that was Roulette Dares, The Haunt Of.
Oh.
That's one that it really, when I started listening to this album, because it's the third song, like, that one caught me. But then it was, the thing with the Mars Volta is there's a lot of their songs are in different languages, or they're just words that aren't even really words, but
in your vernacular, or never will be.
Ariatarka, track number six.
Oh yeah.
Ariatarka. I don't know what it is.
Dude, I like this game.
I like that one too. What about you, man?
I think Ariatarka is the way to say that. I like that. Ariatarka. I think you did well.
Really? Well, here's the thing. On Wikipedia, they put it as one word, but then on my iTunes, it's two words. So I don't know.
Oh, it was one on Amazon, I think. Anyways. Dude, my favorite, I know it probably seems weird based on the length, and maybe many people would probably argue the significance. I don't, but... Dude, Tira Me a las Arañas.
Do you know what that stands for? Do you know what that
translates to? Feed me to the spiders, dude.
Throw me to the spiders.
Yeah, I'll throw me to the spiders.
Although, dude, I think it's misspelled. But
it is, because Tirame is one word, I think, in like the traditional bit of the language. But there's something about that. I didn't do enough musical research, so I apologize. I wish I would have, to understand like what exact mode and scale that he's using.
That's your homework.
But I think it is. I could probably rewind that thing like 10 or 12 times in a row and not even think constant about loop, it because. Huh? Yeah, dude. Yeah. Constant loop.
Constant.
Because you hear it over and over and
over.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, everyone, let us know your favorite tracks below.
Yeah, please do. And in the meantime, we'll get into the tracks. Yeah,
I think we should get into the tracks. We definitely should. Since all of you have liked and subscribed and commented below on your favorite track, now we can talk about the one that we would scratch if we had to. If you just, you know, if that CD... You know, you're trying to put in your CD player and it slipped between your seats. And
It's just part of life. No matter what album you have, like at some point you will fuck it up. I will fuck it. You will. I mean, it will happen.
Dude, are you fucking this up? Yeah. All right.
So the question is that going to be Son et Lumière? Sound et Lumière.
Sounds and light. Well, no, it's not, because This is just, I mean, it's hard to scratch an intro track.
Yeah.
Because, especially when you're considering, like, and if we do want to refer to this as a concept album, story album, it does have sort of a theme and a feel, and more than most. Sure. Now, again, there is the Mars Volta is, they're kind of in a beautiful way. They're beautifully chaotic. That's how I'd kind of describe the sound. And wow, a lot of songs on this album, because they can, and you know, we'll talk about some of the songs, but they can construct and then they can destroy and then they can reconstruct all in the matter of like literally a minute and a half, if not less. So in the beginning here, dude, this song, it starts off with, again, sort of these like weird abstract digital noises, sort of a pulsating
synth. And the keyboard riff.
And then, the keyboard riff is great. But then, dude, one thing they do, especially with their transition sometimes, it's hard to almost even call it a transition. I mean, it is, but they will have these, and it happens earlier on with the first couple of songs where these like, just these drum, just, right? Like, just
And it's cuts, interesting, man. Because it's not, it, if you listen to it, and as the musician nerd in me, like, it's not like 1, 2, 3, and then 1, 2, 3 again. Right? And then one, well, it's not that it's not in time, but they don't hit the same beats every time.
Okay.
And so it's these more like these bigger patterns. It's not just 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and then go into the next song. Right. It's like 1, 2, 3, and then it's like 1, 1, 2. You know what I mean? They chop it up like that in such a cool way.
It's like an inconsistent stutter almost, right?
Yeah, but it's always in time in the broader perspective, right?
Okay.
And that's, I think that's really cool.
Well, and I find some of those transitions are kind of punch you in the face. They can be very jarring. Oh, yeah. Like especially if you're not used to hearing music flow and go in that sort of direction, it can be, again, like I said, Mars Volta is not for everyone. It can be off-putting. For me, I think it's badass. Like, I love it.
Oh,
like,
yeah, sure.
When I first heard this album, I was like, holy shit, this is really good. So that song, it's kind of quick, good little intro. And then it goes right into, I don't even know. How do you say this?
Inner Triassic ESP.
ESP. Yeah, so, you know what ESP stands for, right?
Normally I would think extrasensory perception, but I think in this case it's not.
No, it is ectopic shape-shifting penance propulsion. Well, now that's opposed to the traditional expensatory perception. So, yeah. I know. Deep. Deep.
Dude.
Yeah. I don't even know what I just said or what the fuck that even means. So you know, if somebody out there does, please let us know below.
No, please, because there's part of me where I'm like, I mean, normally we kind of chill out during this and it's a good casual conversation between friends. We have a drink. I guess I must have missed the text where you're like, dude, you need to take acid before this one because you're going to, like, the concepts that we're talking about are way bigger than the human construct, of life. Huge. Oh.
Yeah. But anyways, so.
Roulette dares.
But dude, I love it when when he comes in and he's just like, he just comes in screaming, now I'm lost.
Yeah.
And you're just like, vroom. Like, and I just feel like that's sort of, all of a sudden, dude, the ride has started and you're on the roller coaster. Like
going. No, I agree with that. And I think, obviously in the construct of the greater story of the album, it makes sense. Right. I mean, it really starts the story off both musically and in the story in a good way.
Yeah. Well, and some of his lyrics, again, they're very abstract and strange, but they work.
Oh, yeah.
But like here, it's like, its musk was fecal in origin as the words dribbled off its chin. And you're just like, I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds interesting. It does.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I also, one thing I really like about him, I think again, I don't want this to be a deterrent for people not to listen to it if you haven't listened to the Mars Volta. But they're just a very different sound. In his vocals, the way he sings, might not be for everybody either. There's certain certain artists out there that people just don't like the way they sing. Again, I really enjoyed. I like it. I think he has a tremendous range. He can sound. He can sing very pleasant with a lot of melody, but he can also get really high and kind of scream loud too.
So I agree.
I like how he can raise it up and down and everything.
Yeah.
So, and dude, their drummer, man. I don't know who what's his name. I feel like I need to give him a shout out.
Theodore.
I don't know much about him, but dude, he's got amazing,
unbelievable
shit.
To be able to just like keep up with this music, which is so how do I say this? From like a music kind of a nerd perspective, like the timing, it's not just like your straight rock 4/4, like it is not that beat. It is everywhere.
It's not.
You've ever thought about or haven't thought about.
Yeah.
Like the time signatures to write this music out would be insane. It'd be like Zappa or something.
Yeah. Well, and I think Zappa is one of the influences for Volta, Miles Davis, they've talked about. But yeah, with him, it's interesting because sometimes, you know, he's doing all this crazy drumming stuff where he's kind of fitting in, but then sometimes he's driving it too. So there's kind of this play back and forth. But, you know, again, very, very chaotic. The way they're able to move the tempo up and down so much. I mean, they can crank it up and then you're up here, and then whoom, they just drop the bottom out of
you. I know. It's really awesome, dude. And I think that's, I feel like based on the reviews I read, that had to grab enough of the critics where they were like, man, I get that. And a lot of them basically said it in their own way where they're like, look, I get the lyrics are weird and a little out there, but like everything else is so awesome.
Yeah, and that it doesn't really matter, and it's pretty badass. I mean, it's one of those bands and things that it's very complex, and I've never heard anything like it, so I like it.
Yeah,
that's just it. All right, moving on. Track number 3, Roulette Dares, parens, The Haunt of, close parens. Yes.
Yeah, I to me, this transition, I like it. It's a little nastier. It's a little harder. I think that Roulette Dares kind of takes it to a level that it hasn't been at. And one thing I like about a lot of these songs, not just this one, but some may not notice, but to me, I hear the Hammond organ in there a lot, like in the back, like making these textures like diddly diddly. I mean, it's not like smooth, but it's still haunting in its own right. And I think that it's worth mentioning, I guess, for me.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, 100%. And I've noticed that, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I noticed that in a few songs where it is way off in the distance, but it's there.
But it's there. It makes a presence.
It sounds really good. And
so now there are times where the music stops and starts and gets real crazy. Now, I think I want to throw this out to listeners. If you haven't, me as a fan of the Mars Volta, I find this really funny. But there's a YouTube video out there called the Mars Volta Shreds, and you have to listen to it because it's like,
oh, wow,
it's like somebody who takes concert footage of them. And I think this particular one was on Letterman, and they just cut out their actual music and put in like this crazy, ridiculous stuff. And the thing is, and I love the Mars Volta, but it's like still almost believable because it's so crazy. You got to watch
that's- it. Dude, sounds awesome. Maybe
it is really funny on YouTube.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, it's worth it, dude.
Somewhere. Watch it after you watch us.
The Mars Volta Shreds. Check it out.
Mars Volta Shreds. Dude, there's I love this song. Again, it has some ups and downs in the way it goes.
Yeah.
Lyrics are interesting, man. Dude, open wrist talks back again in the wounds of its skin. They pinprick the witness in ritual contrition. The AM Trinity fell upon asphyxia derailed. Like, whoa. Yeah. Dude, well, one of my favorite lines. Dude, midnight nooses from boxcar to cadavers.
Yeah.
Exoskeleton and that's junction the thing. At the railroad delayed.
Exoskeleton. Yeah. How do you come up with those lyrics? It's amazing.
You know,
now I had watched some interview with the two of them, like on YouTube at some point, and it was like, I want to say that Cedric had said to Omar Rodriguez Lopez, like, he would just say some weird word like sarcophagus and see what music he came up with to that. And then, you
that's
know,
that's your inspiration, dude.
Yeah.
What's my inspiration? Yeah. All right. All right, Graham, let's move on to your favorite track.
Dude.
Tierra Mea Las Arenas.
I don't know what I could say about it that I didn't already say. I just, it's the most wonderful thing. One of the most wonderful I've heard. I think it may be in some weird mode like Lydian or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you said you think it's done with a 12 string, right?
Yes, or I would argue a traditional like instrument.
Okay, because it sounds like to me, it sounds like it's got a strange tuning or something. Like when I hear it, like something doesn't sound.
But that's my point about the mode. It's not to say that it has a strange tuning. I don't hear it as microtonal. Like when you listen to King Gizzard. There's things that I hear with King Gizzard, which we know that they're doing this, but it's like,
right.
It's deliberately microtonal and it sounds microtonal. This to me doesn't sound microtonal. So it's like they're using the equal tempered 12 piece scale that they would use in Western music. But by mode, I mean, it's like, it's basically a mode. Think of a mode as like a sound. Like, you know how you hear something and you're like, this sounds Eastern or this sounds Spanish or this sounds whatever. That you could think of, you could think of a mode sort of like that. And this mode is like somewhere I don't know that I've ever heard, but it's like the most amazing and weird and fucking like awkwardly beautiful thing I've ever heard.
Amazing, dude.
Yeah.
It's pretty dope.
I like to play.
I like to play. No Stairway denied. Moving on. Track number 5. The Drunk Ship of Lanterns. This song, to me, especially in the beginning, it has this almost like a Santana type feel,
yes
right.
I would absolutely agree with you, man, but it's like Santana on acid in space,
which,
you
know? I mean, has happened a lot of times. It's, you know, in that 60s documentary that VH1 that we've loved so much, he talks about his music. He's like, oh, and then we did this and we did this and we made it like Afro-Cuban or whatever, and it has that sort of kind of feel to it, right?
Yeah, and you're right. And there's only a handful of songs, I would say, on the album where you could really cite that. But this is definitely one of those parts.
Yeah. Well, also, though, this song is one of the strangest to me. The tempo and the instrumentation at times seems to get very out of balance. But that, to me, I don't know, maybe that's part of the title, like the Drunk Ship of Lanterns.
Yeah,
I don't know what the hell that is. But it just seems like the song seems very uneasy for me. And I feel like that represents the title well. They, again, we've talked about sort of their soundscapes and their weird sounds, which is cool. But this song at the end, it almost has this sort of a Beck ending, which where it gets just kind of a little crazy, and then the song kind of falls apart and everything. Like I talked about earlier, they're able to deconstruct and then reconstruct. And I feel like that's kind of this whole song is almost a deconstruction.
No, I agree. But I think it, And especially in terms of the length of the song and the place it is in the album, like it works.
Sure, you know? Absolutely. Yeah.
And well, yeah, one of my favorites.
Yeah. But well, then we move on to Aria Tarka, which I would actually say is now I forget. I thought maybe I had this, saw this, didn't have it in my notes. Was this, what were the singles? Was this one of the singles? No, Intrinsic ESP, whatever ESP
Intelligence. Intergalactic.
Interplanetary. Yeah. So this one, I actually feel is one of the most digestible on the album. And it's one of my favorite on the album.
I agree with you.
The transition, it has those transitions and everything, but it doesn't have sort of this, like if there was one song where I was going to introduce someone to the Mars Volta, probably off this album, this would be the song. Just because it has more of a rock feel to it. The transitions are very, kind of, what's the best way to say it? Not obvious, but
I don't want to say predictable either, but yeah.
Predictable. I would say predictable more than obvious.
Yeah.
It has the standard kind of, up and down that you would expect from sort of a rock song. So it's about as formulaic as the Mars Volta could get. How about that?
Okay. No, that's fair.
Oh. What do you got? You got anything?
No, I don't. I agree with you. I mean, that was more or less what I had in mind. But then you go to Cicatriz ESP.
ESP. Cicatriz means scar.
Oh, that's right. I did read that.
12 minutes and 30 seconds. It's
not, I know. I think this was one of the ones that was like on their demo, but it wasn't as long. I could be wrong on that. Please correct me if I am. But
I think you're right. It was.
But one thing I like about this is, dude, for me, this was not even in consideration for a scratch because of that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the rhythm they had to was just. It was so good. Like you can't deny the way that moves. I just,
yeah,
that really got to me.
Well, and there is
heard got sort to of me. That, it always has. Yeah.
There is that middle to two thirds section of the song where it gets.
Yeah, it does go into a little like Adam Hart Mother kind of.
It's very soundscapey.
Yeah.
But, it's got those synth sounds and it's a little dreamy. But what's cool about it is it sounds like you're in this almost like this dark, wet cave, right?
Yeah,
and
you can
hear the drops falling and echoing all around the cave. And it's very kind of cool. But then the song just kind of picks back up and you're right back into it. So,
yeah,
to me, and I'll say this with this album, there's so many transitions and different sounds and everything that I can kind of get lost in the album, even if I'm listening to
it. I agree.
I'm like, what song am I on? Now, there's a few songs that, they do stand out where I'm like, oh, it's this song and this song.
Yeah.
But I think this part of the album, especially with this song, because it feels like it's a couple songs in one.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden I'm like, wait, you have to reorient yourself a little bit.
Dude, I don't disagree with that, man. I found myself, I was listening to it again today. And like I would pull out the phone every once in a while just to make sure that I knew. But one thing I forgot to mention with the Drunk Ship of Lanterns, which I think I may have mentioned before, dude, the section with the beats in it, like the beats are so fresh in it, and it's they're not like. I mean, they're these odd tempos and key time signatures that I really enjoy.
I like it a lot.
Now, this apparatus must. Not could you please, it must be unearthed.
Yeah, like now, right now.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, again, another freaking great song. Yeah.
Did you read about the title of this one, dude? Because this,
I did, and you would probably be better. Had you seen? Yes. If, I mean, you can probably speak to it more. So, did you now before you read it? I mean, did you make that connection before a little bit, or what? What?
I did not make that connection before, but I've seen that on things like not a lot of them because it's either on something like usually pretty old or something that's like a reissue of something old.
Okay.
Where it would say this apparatus must be earthed, which means, dude, plug it into a fucking grounded circuit.
Plug it in, plug it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just, I never put two and two together from having seen that. Not that I've seen it a lot, because I wish I could look back and show you the wall of vintage amplifiers that I have, but, there isn't that. So with that comes just saying that I have seen it and I really thought the reference was cool.
That was pretty cool.
I really did.
Well, one thing that I think is cool about this song is I love, they put an effect on his vocals that I really, you know, I've been waiting for so long, so long. Yeah. But then he's like, you know, and Anonymous, you know, I just, when he gets into that, it has kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it really. There's almost like a grittiness to it, but it's half digital. There's something that just, it has something to it. There's some texture to it. And again, I feel like this is almost like a really good rock song. So I'd kind of put it almost on par with Area Tarka, where it's kind of a sort of the straightforward rock song, and I kind of dig that. But there's it's got, it's hard to say, it's got really good lyrics and stuff like that, because Omar's stuff is just so out there and abstract.
I'm sorry, if you listen to the Mars Volta for the lyrics, you may be a serial killer. Like, I'm sorry, that may be possible, because like the lyrics are so fucked up and out there.
That's the thing. They are, but they work. It's not like,
that's a great way to say it. They are, but they work.
It
fits. For the music, it does fit.
Absolutely.
Amazingly.
Absolutely.
But you're not gonna like read through a lyric sheet and be like, damn man, that's my life. You know, like, well, that is not gonna happen.
Well, I can guarantee you one thing, Grim, you're not gonna do that.
No, not.
So,
no, probably not.
Then we get to what I would say is probably the darkest song on the album,
but one of the best, and slowest, with the Latin beat too, the slow Latin beat with Televators, man.
Dude,
right?
It's got the acoustic, but then there's an electric that kind of matches it. But even when it starts off, dude, they're like kind of like back in the cave again. It sounds like there's sort of birds or bats flying around. They really create this dark, I don't know why I think of this dark, wet sort of cave like atmosphere. And man, it's uneasy.
That's cool though, because listen to the album and you can say, I hear this in this song, like that means as an artist, they did a phenomenal job, in my opinion, because that's not easy to do in any album, especially that specific, where you're like a dank, wet cabin. Where I'm just sitting there waiting for the neighbor to get drunk and fall down the stairs.
With the enormous head. It's just,
Damn it, I forgot the enormous head.
The enormous head. Rather chew broken glass. Yeah. But this song.
Televators is not chewing broken glass.
It's not. But I will say this. I feel like this is the most reflective of the the scenario he painted with his
like
friend.
Lyrically almost like the most lyrically relatable.
Dude, just as he hit the ground, they lowered a toe that stuck in his neck to the gills. But then he says one day this chalk outline will circle this city, was robbed of the asphalt that cushioned his face. I mean, that's That's, dude, that, I mean, dude, you talk about those are good fucking lyrics, man.
For, yeah, they are. For I don't
representing the scene and the story, yes, of what we know about what happened now.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah. And it's just tough because even like kind of having an understanding of the story, I mean, it's still just, it's really abstract, but again, in a way where you're like, I this works. I like this. Like I may not get every nuance of what you're writing, but overall it's
pretty dope.
It's pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, well, we're going to finish up with track number 10. Dude, take the veil. The
fucking veil.
Serpentaxed.
So right there, I'm like, oh, hold on. So you wrote a short story about this dude that, you know, does X, X, and X.
Yeah.
At what point did you come up with that name? Like, I've never heard of a first name or a last name that is even like anything kind of related to that.
I'm not sure.
The Taxed family is not like, if you were to look through the phone book, I don't think you'd find Taxed a lot. Cause oh, dude, Serpent Taxed is the name of like this character, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay.
That his short story is based on. And I'm like, where do you come up with that fucking name? That's amazing.
Here's the thing, Grim. And one of the things, they had one of their bandmates, who is sort of, he is the one who wrote and came up with a lot of the abstract sounds. The effects and sound manipulation is Jeremy Michael Ward. He overdosed on heroin, I believe. And they were users at this point. So that might have been a little bit of an influence during this time.
Oh, interesting. Well, yeah, no. And I guess I get all that for like the content of everything. But to me, the name of this character, Serpent Taxed, is like the weirdest thing I've ever heard of. It no criticism intended. I mean, I haven't written a short story with a guy with a cool name. No. But it's just straight. It's not like, you know, like
it's like Jeffrey Lebowski or something.
Yeah, or like John Cronson, like it, or you
Pete
know?
Peters or Steve Stevens, mm-hmm, or yeah, Jimmy John, whatever. But so this track, Grim,
my favorite guitar riff in the whole fucking album, no question. Yeah. Oh, it's so, dude, he's just like ripping those, like it's so good. I love this guitar part so much.
It's a very good song. It has, again, it kind of ties, I feel like it ties the room together. It ties the album together. Oh, it
definitely ties the room together.
Brings it back after Televator kind of takes it down for a little bit.
Amen, dude.
You get back to the kind of, like I said, the beautiful chaos. And yeah, there's that part where I feel like they do this sort of this crossfade or something of almost like a Flea's bass into Frusciante's guitar, because I think Frusciante plays guitar on this song. He may.
I don't know if it's this one. I think he said he like added some sparse guitar parts and synth stuff too.
He played on Cicatriz ESP. But
yeah, dude, take the veil, you take the dive, man.
Do you take the dive? Yeah, that's pretty good. You brought me here. Yeah, it's dude, really, really good. But they do this cool transition, I think, of the bass sort of into the guitar. And I'm not sure if that's how it was done or whatever, but it's after kind of the instruments all kind of go out into mm-hmm. this weird little thing, and then the song comes back in. And I don't know. I always thought that part was really, really cool. So
yeah. No, I love it. Well, dude, we talked about our favorites. We talked about the tracks.
Yep.
It's time to get out. I don't know what you're going to scratch this with. It's a guy who's in a coma.
An IV needle.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, let's go with that. Okay.
So it seems dark.
So who had the last IV needle? Oh, fuck, in this case.
The last album we did was American Dream. I don't know. But here's the thing. Why don't you go first? Because, well, I'm not sure. Because I think one of my songs might be one that you disagree with. So we ain't going to overtime. I know that.
Okay.
Pretty sure. I mean, fuck.
I don't think we are either. I don't think we are either. I'll go ahead.
I think I know your song, but I'm not going to guess it.
Can we just do this live? I just want you to guess it. And see if
you want me to guess it. I think I need to go with Roulette Dares.
No.
I don't know why. I was just, when you were talking about it, I just had this feeling that maybe you were going to go with that one.
Dude, 10 years ago, maybe. Okay. But not even just the haunt of. In this case, I'm going with this apparatus must be unearthed.
Ooh. Okay.
Despite the love for how they developed that title.
Yeah.
There's something about like the way it's delivered and everything where I'm not saying the song isn't absolutely critical to the album or even an awesome song, but it's just like if I had to live without one part of the album, that would be the part.
Interesting. Yeah. I thought there was two songs that were, again, what I would call sort of formulaic as Mars Volta could be, and Aria Tarka, and then maybe this apparatus might fall into those categories where they're songs and they flow. They don't have maybe like these weird soundscapes and things.
Yeah. Sure.
So that's why I kind of put those two together. Mine actually, and I know you are going to be super fucking.
Yeah. I'm going to get a W. I think I'm going to throw it on. I think it's Tiramisu La Araña.
No, it's not actually. No, it's not actually.
Oh, thank Christ. Okay.
It's actually Drunk Ship of Lanterns.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. And I was going to say, because I know you like the beat part and everything.
But dude, for 7 minutes and 6 seconds, I understand how you could live without the beat. Like, I'm not throwing down a WTFITS for this.
So here's the thing with all their other songs, I feel like that get unbelievably chaotic. And like I've said a few times already, they construct and they're able to deconstruct. I feel like Drunk Ship of Lanterns is a complete deconstruction almost the whole time. I feel like for me personally, my ears don't hear a lot of a melody. Whereas I think in a lot of their other songs, they're able to come back to a melodic tone, where in that one, it doesn't, even if they do, it doesn't hold.
I dig you, man.
There's still some things, even if there is a melodic tone, there's things around it that are just still sort of unbalanced and everything. So that's why I go with that. And also because Aria Tarka is one of my favorite songs on the album. Yeah. So I can go from 4 to 6 and then
just
kick the rest of the album.
Yeah.
So
I get it. I can't throw down a big detractor for that.
All right. Good deal.
So, I mean, right. Well played.
Thank you. Well, I think we should ask our friends out there.
I was just going to say, please let us know what your scratch is, because we are not the ultimate authorities on anything.
We're not. In fact, you can scratch whatever you want. We might judge you, but it's okay because I'm sure you're judging us, because that's what we do here, right? I mean, opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody's got them.
I was going to say assholes, but yeah. Although Tirame la Alas Arañas, I mean, dude, fucking think about that one. If that's your scratch, that's my only one.
What the fuck is that shit?
This is our concern, dude. Yeah.
Yes. All right. Fucking 8-year-olds. All right, Grim. Everyone is, I'm sure, already liked and subscribed if they haven't signed off at this point. But if you are still here,
like subscribe, and comment below.
It's time to go. The Dude and Grim Show.
The Dude and Grim Show.
Scratch a Track is produced by The Dude and Grim. Additional music provided by Moore and the Tims. Copyright 2021. The Dude and Grim Show.
The thing that is occupying the foreground is nostalgia. Nostalgia is the name of the game in every part of our world.